tonight on Arena. Paul Whittington remembers Robert Redford, who died today. Cormac Begley talks about his National Concert Hall event. And Cara Maxwell discusses her novel, Sugartown. You can, as always, text us on 51551, email arena at rte.ie, and we are on Instagram these days at rte_arena. As you'll have heard all throughout the day, the death was announced earlier of the actor, producer, director and all-round icon Robert Redford, who passed away at the age of 89. He was the movie star who was movie star handsome, but who was always determined to be more than his looks. In his choice of films, from comedies such as Barefoot in the Park to tense real-life drama such as All the President's Men to romantic leads like Out of Africa, Redford refused to be typecast. He was the Sundance Kid to Newman's Butch Cassidy, a baseball player in The Natural, the grieving father in Ordinary People, and the idealistic student in The Way We Were. Paul Whittington joins me now to look back at his career. Paul, when you think about the longevity of his career, but also the breadth and the range and the quality, it's quite some career.
It is, and it could have been a very different kind of career if as you suggest, he'd allowed his career to be defined by his looks, because he was like blindingly handsome person. He glowed gold. He was better looking than most of the female actors he worked with. He wasn't interested in that, and he often said that he was deeply disturbed by how people reacted to what he looked like. So he did his best as soon as he'd established himself to move away from that. He was very often underrated as an actor, because he arrived in a time when the post Marlon Brando era, if you like, where showy actors like Al Pacino and Robert Redford and all these people who you always knew were acting were in vogue, and he was very different than that. He started out in theatre, he came through television. He did loads of television in the 60s, and you have to be under on television or you just look like an idiot. And so he was very under always, but he was a very, very capable actor, and he did have range.
Let me scroll back ever so slightly and start at the beginning. Tell me about his background and where he came from.
He came from, although he was never really at home in Hollywood, he came from very near Hollywood. He came from Santa Monica. He was the only child of, he was Irish-American on both sides, actually, which he was kind of interested in himself. And he grew up, he was fascinated with, there's a story about him having seen Bambi, I think, I don't know, 20-something times, and crawling off his mother's knee towards the source of light, so which is a kind of metaphor for what happened afterwards. But he was interested in acting, but he was more interested in painting and art. He was a bit of a hoodlum in his teenage years, according to him. And then he became interested in art and he went to Europe. He went to Paris and Rome and the south of France and wandered around. And it was after he came back to New York that he began to take acting semi-seriously. And he did some plays, did loads of television, I say, the Twilight Zone, all that sort of stuff. And then he was in a play, a Neil Simon play, Barefoot in the Park, which was made into a film with Jane Fonda after that.
Yeah, I think that's the original Broadway production of that. So he starts there on Broadway post his television career, or in and around the same time as his television career. Tell me a little bit about that kind of era of his career.
The TV stuff. Well, he was put in loads of stuff. I remember seeing this kind of, was it a Twilight Zone or a different thing, where he was a soldier and he played loads of different roles. Like a lot of, Gene Hackman did TV too. Like he came through it and you were trained differently. If you'd come through the studio system, you were trained to think that if you'd made it, you were the centre of the earth. He never felt that. So that when things began to move for him, Barefoot in the Park, the film, was a big film for him. And Jane Fonda was a friend of his. In fact, he was in two more films with her, and he didn't do that often. And after that, he was knocking around. Downhill Racer was it used to be on TV. All these films used to be on TV. It was a nice film. And then Butch Cassidy came up, and it was actually, he always credited Paul Newman because everybody else was going to be cast in it except him. He wasn't well known, and Newman decided he was the person to play the Sundance Kid.
Well, we're going to get to all of those in a moment. I want to play a clip, first of all, from All the President's Men. This is Redford playing the real-life Washington Post journalist Bob Woodward investigating the Watergate break-in. In this scene, this is a one-take masterclass in acting, and it's him on the phone.
Could I please, Mr. Dahlberg?
Yes.
Kenneth Dahlberg?
Yes.
This is Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. About that $25,000 check deposited in the bank account of one of the Watergate burglars, Mr. Bernard Barker? As you know, sir, the check has your name on it. We were doing a story on this, and I was wondering if you would care to comment or explain.
I turn all my money over to the committee.
What committee is that, sir? The committee to re-elect?
Yes, yes.
And why would you do that?
I raise a lot of money. I'm Midwest Finance Chairman.
For the committee to re-elect? Hello?
Yes, that's right.
Now, how do you think your check got into the bank account of Watergate burglar?
I'm a proper citizen. What I do is proper.
Oh, I understand.
I've just been through a terrible ordeal. My neighbor's wife has been kidnapped.
Well, how do you think your check got into Barker's account, though?
He brought depth to his parts and emotion to his parts, but he also had wonderful comic timing as well.
Yeah, he did. That's very funny, the focus of the journalist. But it's you can see what I mean about under. He's like, if you know, sort of a method actor had done that role, you know, he'd be bleeding into the phone. But it was all under and quiet. And that film is such an interesting film. He didn't direct that film, but he might as well have. Because he was all over it. It wouldn't have been made without him. He and Bakuda rewrote the screenplay, the mood, the set, the look of the film. He was behind the camera all the time. It really is his film, and it's a great film.
Okay, let's do Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, because for many people, it's the role that they see as being his most iconic one. Mm. It's still an extraordinary piece of cinema today. I saw it for the last time a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it is. And obviously, it's an anti-Western. And actually, if you read the real story of the two of them, and actually a physical description of the Sundance Kid, he didn't look like Robert Redford, I don't think. But So that film was doing something that a number of films at the end of the 60s into the 70s were beginning to do. We're beginning to examine the whole, poisonous myth of the American West, the legacy of which can still be seen today. But what nobody was expecting was what would happen with the two of them, because, like, they just were extraordinary together, and they brought something else to that film. Again, it used to be on the television when I was a kid, and you just were fascinated by these two impossibly handsome people, and they drew you in. I think the cleverest thing the two of them did was they only did it once more, and that wasn't deliberate. They did want to do stuff together, but after the sting, they never did anything because nothing was right, and they were so wise because, you know, you could have just milked that relationship to death, but they didn't.
Okay, let me play something from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. This is where Butch and Sundance are on the run, and the only way out is to jump off a cliff.
They're going for position, all right. Better get ready.
Kid, the next time I say let's go someplace like Bolivia, let's go someplace like Bolivia.
Next time. Ready?
No, we'll jump.
Like hell we will.
No, it'll be okay. If the water's deep enough, we don't get squished to death. They'll never follow us.
How do you know?
Would you make a jump like that and you didn't have to?
I have to, and I'm not gonna.
Well, we got to, otherwise we're dead. They're just gonna have to go back down the same way they come. Come on.
Just one clear shot, that's all I want.
Come on. We got to.
Up. Get away from me.
Why?
I want to fight them.
They'll kill us.
Maybe.
You want to die?
Do you?
All right. I'll jump first.
No.
Then you jump first.
No, I said.
What's the matter with you?
I can't swim!
And if you've never seen that, you really should. Tell me about the Sundance Film Festival, possibly the thing that will be his greatest legacy.
Well, yeah, as well as a couple of the films, I'd say. Well, he did a couple of interesting things. As soon as he could afford to, he moved to Utah to get away from Hollywood. He had an incredible capacity to keep his private life private. He divorced his first wife in the 80s, but the press didn't find out for years because he was so good at covering his tracks. So he bought this place in Utah, and he always said that, you know, whether people have therapy, I have Utah. So it was very important to him. And then he and a small group of other people had this idea for this festival, because even at that point in the 70s, which we consider a golden era for American cinema, independent cinema was sort of under threat, and that festival did great things for many years, and also the workshop was set up, which from which a lot of good has flowed. I think it's all changed. We're just saying, I think it's all changed slightly as he became less involved, but it's an incredible achievement, and a lot of good flowed from that.
He was clever in managing his own career as well. I mean, he set up a production company very early on, which wasn't necessarily the done thing in those days.
Yeah, he did, and he worked with friends like Sidney Pollack on that. But he was heading for direction, as we mentioned. I mean, he practically directed all the presidents. Well, I know Alan Pakula was a great director, but he practically did. And then he started doing that, and he made some interesting films. Ordinary People did really well, and he won an Oscar as director for that, I think. Quiz Show, The Milagro, Green Beanfield Wars. He only directed about 8 films, if I'm correct. But they were usually things he was passionately interested in, and the environment also. He had this idea in his head always about the United States, that America having been something else before the United States came along, and he was very equivocal about what had happened afterwards. He was very interested in Native American causes and all that kind of thing, and that often came up in his films.
Okay, we've mentioned what for many people are the tentpoles or the obvious one: Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, All the President's Men. Is there anything else that people should consider if they're going to go through a Redford rewatch over the next week or two?
So there's two. There's Jeremiah Johnson, which he made with his friend Sidney Pollack, and it's quite an unusual film. He plays this frontiers man. He doesn't look like he usually does. He's chased by bears. He reaches deals with Native Americans, and they made it, I think, in Utah. And it's an amazing film because it's sort of ahead of its time. It's talking about a lot of things that would subsequently be talked about, most especially the environment. And then the other was the sort of slightly lesser known 70s conspiracy thriller, 3 Days of the Condor, which he plays this guy who goes out for coffee. He's sort of a minor cog in the CIA, and he comes back and the whole office has been shot up. And he's great in that with Faye Dunaway. That's a really interesting film from that time as well.
Paul Whittington, my thanks for talking to us about the actor, director and Sundance Festival founder Robert Redford, who died today at the age of 89. We're going to finish this with the Adagio from Mozart's Clarinet Concerto in A. It's a piece that's used incredibly effectively in Out of Africa in 1985, in which Meryl Streep's Karen Blixen and Robert Redford's Dennis Finch Hatton fly in a biplane over the stunning African landscape.